forth. Now we're going to have a church planting panel discussion. So, a bit about where Stephen's from and what church he's with. Sitting beside me over here, now I want you to imagine yourself being in the 1960s and imagine yourself walking into a small little venue, and out of nowhere come the Beatles, and they give you a private concert. Well, that's kind of like what we have here. We've the veritable rock stars of the Calgary evangelical scene here. So, so I'm going to let Ringo and company introduce themselves. So I'll get you guys to, if you could just say your name, what church you're with, and how long you've been with your church to start with.
I would rather be Paul or John than Ringo, just to be clear on that. So my name is Clint Humphrey. I'm pastor of Calvary Grace Church. It's great to be out here because I know lots of folks, and it's great to it's kind of like a family reunion. And so, yeah, I've been pastoring there 12 years, church I planted in Calgary. So
you planted that church?
I planted the church, yeah. And they still haven't fired me, so I'm very thankful.
My name is Trevor Peacock, and I'm at Redemption Church Calgary North, and we planted 9 years ago this September.
And were you the founding planting pastor?
I was, yeah.
Okay, so we got two founding planting pastors here, which leads us to the last fellow there.
My name is Jeff Jones. I'm the pastor at Grace Church of Cochrane, and I've been there for 12 weeks. Which is how long the church has existed so far, by God's grace.
So Jeff, let me ask you, are you the founding planting pastor of that church?
Hasn't had much time for anybody else, so I guess.
So let me pick on maybe yourself and Clint to start with. Tell me the connection of the two of you, because we're talking about church planting, and you're the newest church plant. So tell us how that plant came to be, and the two of you, I'll let you guys go back and forth on that a little bit. Just for the folks here to understand a little bit of your context. So how did that church plant come about?
Okay, so we had a number of people who lived in Cochrane. So they're living in a community, commuting into Calgary. And some of them lived in Cochrane originally. Others were members of our church in Calgary who then, through the years, moved out to Cochrane for work or, you know, just for various reasons. So you had a group of people already traveling in. And they started to develop real connections, great fellowship. There was a real bond amongst them. And then Jeff was out there as well. And Jeff was an associate pastor at our church. And so as time went on, we just thought that this group is sound enough, solid enough, and with the prospect of Jeff then being the planting pastor, that there could be a church plant in Cochrane. And so that was kind of the rationale. And we started praying about it and thinking, you know, we started to put in a little bit of planning in place. Even though there was this group of people out there, we didn't just kind of let them go and do their thing. We set up a bit of a plan and thought through how the church plant would roll out, and then we did. Then we basically had this launch at Easter. So,
good. And how's that been going to date? It's early, but how's it been going so far?
It's been going well to date. We've been meeting continuously again. This will be 9 or 10 weeks from our
folks we brought from Calvary Grace. It's the process has had a bit of a clarifying effect on them. We had a couple of folks who they never committed to membership at Calvary Grace. They're asking to come into membership with the new church formally. That's progress. We've got another couple who they're long overdue for baptism. They're now pressing for it. I'm very encouraged by that. And we've had a couple of, I would say, four families from the community that have joined us since we started. They've been attending regularly, and yeah, some will come with baggage, as is always the case. But they've been consistent. They've been committed. They're trying to pitch in as best they can, and I think that's really encouraging.
Trevor, you mentioned you're part of the initial church plant there. Your church has been involved
planting other churches. Is that correct? Can you share that just a little bit of your history there?
Yeah, so we planted, it'll be 9 years since September. And then in our history, we've had different people come from different areas. And I'm trying to think, it was 2013, I think, there was a couple that was driving from Olds down to our church. So there was about an hour's drive in total for them. They were even, we're a set-up, tear-down situation. They were even volunteering to do that. So we're talking the kind of family, they're up at 5 in the morning to come through a blizzard to help set up chairs, that kind of committed family. And but they just, they kept praying that, God would allow a church like ours to be in their community. And so 4 years ago, in May, we had our official launch in Olds. And to begin with, we thought, well, let's stream the services to begin with, and then we'll just pray that as soon as there's enough money, we'll hire someone. Well, God's timetable on that went a lot quicker than what we thought. One of our guys in our church was looking at going into full-time ministry, and he wound up going there. And so John went there. I think it was by June they were there. And it's going well there. And then 2 years ago, a core group for South Calgary started, and they officially launched about a year and a half ago. So there's two churches that have come out of our church.
Yeah, that's a great encouragement. Thanks for sharing that. Stephen, church planting seems to be at the very heart of Mile One Mission. How is the church planting work actually going there in St. John? Can you give us a bit of an update on that?
Okay, so Calvary Baptist Church came into existence as a result of a split, which is the way far too many Baptist church plant. but in 1993, and for good reasons, they took a stand on, a needful theology. It kind of existed and maintained or held itself together. But by the Lord's grace, it's really, really taken off. And so we started 18 months ago, Mile One Mission. And the vision is to start 10 churches over the next 10 years strategically throughout the city. So we're 18 months in. We are in the pre-launch stages of our first church plant. We have started the moving into our second area and the planning of our third. Our biggest issue right now is just to continue to create the partnerships and recruit. I need two more planters. I've got lots of interns, but I need planters to create the teams. So right now our big prayer request is the continued partnerships, because we're bankrolling it all. And as I've said to some of you before, so St. John's now statistically is less church than Montreal. It's the most unevangelized city in Canada, at about 0.5%. So we really feel the need to get that done. So our model is we're trying to get 100 churches in Canada to partner with us to at $100 or $200 a month. And we're trying to get 200 churches in the United States to partner with us. And if they do that, then we can bankroll entirely ourselves the first 5 church plants. And so that means we can recruit, we can set the timetables, we can get the teams put together the way we want to put them together. So we will launch our first Bible study in one neighborhood in the fall, in September, and we'll start to do the pre-launch stuff in the other two sites as we get our plan. But we've got our interns already working, already meeting. There's a process we go through and how we do all of that, but that's where we're at in 18 months, which is far better than we ever thought. Now, I always tell people, whatever God's doing, I expect half of it to tank, because that's Satan. And so I just want to always keep perspective on things and expect failure and just be gobsmacked when God allows something to succeed.
So this might sound like an obvious question, but we don't want to have it left unsaid. What's the biblical rationale
for church planting?
The Bible says so.
Be more specific.
I think this is a struggle because, there's not a verse, thou shalt plant churches. It's just that from Acts to Revelation, that's all it's done. The people go from Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria to the uttermost parts of the earth, and churches are established. And interestingly, forget your eschatology, but at Revelation, to set it all up, is letters to 7 churches. And whether you're pre-mill, all-mill, I do find it fascinating. At the end of it, and a bride shall come out of heaven as adorned. Well, everywhere else in the Bible, bride's used. It means the church. So it just seems to me that the church is a really big deal to God.
And if it's a really big deal to God, it should be a real big deal to us.
I'll add in to that and simply say that the biblical rationale for church planting has to be the Great Commission. And that's because the New Testament doesn't have any category for a new believer who is not part of a healthy church. We are not saved to be me, myself, and my Bible. It's you're saved to be part of a church. And so a logical corollary of making disciples where there have been no disciples ever before is there has to be churches for them. And so if there's not a church there, you're roping those disciples together into a church.
And I think part of your question, if I was to break apart your question, I mean, obviously the Great Commission, you know, that's going to apply to missions. We can also think of parachurch agencies. But then, and Jeff alluded to it, I mean, specifically, why churches? Why churches? Why not just set up evangelistic stands? And we have to then, you know, you think of Ephesians 3:10, that it's through the church that the manifold wisdom of God is made known. And so to recognize that the local church is then that primary means by which God manifests his glory. And so that's why we need to plant churches. Now, obviously, you need to share the gospel in order to gather people who are going to be a church. But that's what planting churches is. It's still actually this earlier discussion you guys just had. It's the question of missions. And so when we're talking about church planting, that's what you're doing. It's pioneer missions. You're establishing that.
Good. That's great. Thank you. So here's a question. Maybe this stirs the pot. I don't know. I will try my best to stir the pot. So there are different schools of thought, and when we get into particular models, it can get weird and dicey and whatever. But there's a school of thought that says, hey, let's take some of our most capable, gifted leaders, and we'll send them to give strength to the new church. And to start it that way, is that the best approach to church planting, that we send our best people to start the plant, or is there some inherent danger in that kind of thinking?
I've got all kinds of opinions, so I'll fire away.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeff's here. Jeff was my right hand man. I mean, he is our best, and so we sent him away. And at great cost to our church, I think I can candidly say. And so is that a mandate? Is that what everybody ought to do? Well, I don't think there's any rationale that way. But at the same time, this willingness to be generous, namely to have good, sound, quality people go so that you have, in these infant works, you actually have people that are well-qualified, prepared, experienced, going. And when I asked the question in the last panel, I texted to you, I was wondering about the quality of the candidates for the mission agencies. Because just from my observation, that many of the candidates are actually poorly equipped, they're poorly prepared, and so that they actually don't have biblical worldviews, and then they're having to learn, you know, the target worldview of whoever they're trying to reach. They don't really even have a biblical one. And so we have to actually do a better job of over-preparing people, I think. And I think that's key. And I think in Canada as well, and I'm sure these guys would agree, Canada is pretty hard ground, and so you guys have to be very equipped, especially the pastors. So,
so I'd say a couple of things with that. I think the people who are fired up about going to a church plant are often good, they're really good people. Right, they already have a heart for Christ Church, and they think, wow, it'd be great if it would expand into our neighborhood or in this particular place, and so I want to be a part of that. But I think we also have to be careful not to say all our best people left, you know, because, like, everyone else is looking around like, oh, well, what's that mean about me, you know?
Those are still there.
Right? I guess I wasn't part of that team. So I think we have to be careful with that, but I think there's that natural, like, you know, good people are going to want to go and be a part of it. But it also, at the same time, causes your people who do remain behind to have to step it up and to fill the void as well. So I think it can provide health for both if done right.
So that kind of ties into a question I was going to have as a follow-up. How do you safeguard the sending church to ensure that they're going to continue to be strong after the plant church has been initiated? And you kind of alluded to that a little bit,
yeah.
But
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I think that we do as a disservice sometimes in the church is that we think that there's only certain people that are important in the church. That's just not a biblical view. I mean, everyone, I'm just doing this series right now in our church, but just that every particular person who is a believer, who's truly a part of Christ's church, has been given a specific gift for the church and is vital for the health of the church. And so we should get a move out of this kind of idea that only some people serve in the church. Everyone should be serving in the church. So I think teaching that way, and then as you're sending out, there's the planning of who's filling in at the same time. Not just hoping, but having a strategic plan as to, okay, who's going to fill the void for these people who are leaving.
Yeah, leaving well, I'm sure looking back, we'll have some lessons we could learn and maybe have done better if we look back on how we did it. But honestly, I think a lot of the folks we took to Cochrane, they were heavily involved in ministry. Like, we had a long-standing Sunday school teacher. We had a guy running our greeting ministry. We had basically the core of one of Calvary Grace's worship teams. Lots of these folks had to train up their replacements before they left. I know I've had to do that, and to a degree I'm actually in some way still doing that, like handing off bits and pieces to my successor, Calvary Grace. And so I think it's very important that you do that, not just for the health of your mother church, but if you're not able to train up other people, you're not going to succeed in church planting anyway.
I'll just add that I think churches have to be careful when you're talking about having your best people leave. I think churches have to be careful that they don't get kind of into the faddishness of church planting, and they want to plant churches, and so then they have ill-conceived church plants that they send out, and what it does, it actually cannibalizes their own church, and they're actually not as healthy as they thought they were. And so the result is then all you do is you send out a poor church plant and you basically gut your own church and it collapses. You have two prospective churches that end up crashing. So I think, and I just believe that in Canada we have to be a little bit more concerned about the health of the sending churches. Whereas in the States, and we all love our American brothers, you know, down there and their books that they write, but it's very easy to just, you know, hang out a shingle and say, we're going to have services in this building, you know, starting next Sunday, and you can do it down in Arizona or down in Texas or wherever, and you're going to have a lot of people show up. And you can have a sustainable assembly very quickly. Whereas here, it's just harder ground. And so I think there has to be a little bit more thought about sustainability, both for the sending church as well as for the plant. And that's why with Steve, you know, he's doing this work of Mile One Mission, because if he was just going to have Calvary Baptist by itself try to plant churches, it would just gut his church financially in terms of people and everything. So he has to have this other mechanism to get support. And I think we've got to think a little bit more strategically that way.
That's the only caveat I would add to know the background of this. Basically, the entire launch team of this lived in the area that they're planting the church. If you listen to what Trevor said, it was people that lived. So our whole model is we're not just dividing the pie. We didn't just take a pie that is our church, cut up 8 pieces, say now we're going to slip a pie off to these. No, we're creating new pies. And if someone comes to me, so I'll go to the other extreme. So we're planting a church in another neighborhood. Someone comes to me out of Calvary and says, I think this is really cool. I want to go be an encouragement to them, but they don't live in that neighborhood. I'm going to exercise pastoral authority and say, you got no business being over there. You live in our neighborhood. You're going to leave this neighborhood to drive across down to that neighborhood just so you can hang out and be cool for an hour and a half every Sunday? You don't live there. Like, the idea is to transform areas. And so our model is to get into neighborhoods, break away from the tradition that, oh, I can be a consumer and I pick the church that I like and I'll drive to it, leaving my neighborhood or my whole area behind. Our model is to be in neighborhoods, infect that neighborhood, be a part of that neighborhood. And so that's where our model. So I think there's room for different ways. People just have to understand what their ecclesiology is, because that should drive your view of planting churches.
I'll add one more quick thing to that because it relates to this, is that I guess one lesson we have learned in the early going is that you have to be careful about who goes with your planting team. You are trying to send hopefully a group of solid people. Well, no group of people is going to be uniformly mature. And I don't think it's reasonable to expect that everybody's going to be of the same high level of maturity in a church planting team. And I actually don't think it's necessary either. But what you can't have is people with doctrinal or deep character issues that might actually wind up undermining or destroying the plant. And so a planting church and a planter have to be able to say no to a person who wants to join. And if the people who want to come with this have to have the understanding that we're not just forming another social club here, we're sending troops over the top into no man's land. This is war, and we're going to be picky and choosy about who's going to go. So that would be one lesson we learned in the early going.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. A question came in kind of tying into what you said, Clint, about the importance of the health of the sending church. So the question is this: what characteristics or markers of church health would you suggest that a local church should have before beginning the process of exploring a church plant?
I think a healthy church is going to be one that, by all accounts, is truly centered on the gospel. And so that they'll have doctrinal convictions, they'll have distinctives, every church does. But they will. You'll see that when they turn up the volume on something, they turn it up on the gospel. They don't turn it up on something that's of third or fourth or fifth or sixth importance. You know, and yet it's very easy to attract somewhat of a crowd by cranking up the volume on some particular thing that's really of only fifth or sixth importance in a scale of importance. So it's better to be healthy and have the gospel at the center. And so I think by then practicing, having a church that's practicing good biblical health, namely meaningful membership, that's where you have people from all different walks of life and different spiritual gifts all serving, just like Trevor alluded to. You've got different people serving. It's not, you know, the 10% and the 90. It's you actually have everybody serving and participating. And so that then there's a sense in which they're not consumers coming to the church show, but rather they're all participants in the work of the ministry. And when you have a church like that, then for them to go and reproduce that in a different place, well, it makes sense, because as we know, if a church plant, everybody's got to work. there's nobody riding along. Like you can't just coast along and just show up. You actually have to participate. And so if everybody's participating, you have that culture where everybody's doing a little service job of some type and people are relating to one another, loving one another, using their gifts, as Trevor said. Well, then I think you have that culture. Obviously, it's got to be driven by sound preaching. It's got to have exercising not only of discipleship, but church discipline. And then when you have those habits, those biblical sound habits, I mean, a good guideline for that health would be Mark Dever's 9 Marks of a Healthy Church. You know, when you're modeling that, well, then you're creating then a gospel-centered culture that can be reproduced, you know, in a smaller way, I think. So that would be then a basis, I would say.
Anything you guys want to add to that, or did Clinton nail it?
He nailed it for sure. I the only thing I'd add is maybe making sure everyone knows why you exist as a church. You know what I mean? Like, what are you about? And, you know, going back to the gospel, but then what does that look like in regards to children's ministry? Do you have a children's ministry that's reproducible in another church? Like, or they're like, well, we're still trying to figure it out. You know, it'd be a bit, each of your ministries are focused on the goal and they're running well before you would want to try to reproduce that.
So we know that some of you, Jeff, you are in the kind of right at the beginning stages of church plant. What are some of the hurdles that you have faced right in the kind of those initial stages of a church plant that you didn't think through, or maybe you didn't think through enough, or those types of things. What are those initial hurdles that you faced right at the beginning of church planting?
I don't want to sound prideful or anything, just because, like, I thought our team was quite well prepared by the training program that the elders of our mother church put together. That doesn't mean everything has gone smoothly. That doesn't mean there hasn't been bumps in the road. I will say one thing that I didn't anticipate. It hasn't been a deal breaker, but it has been something that, you know, I've noticed, and if we were to do something like this again, I'd probably think through this. It's just it kind of an artifact of my role at Calvary Grace before going. I was, and I actually still am, the youth director. There's still a joint youth group. And if there's one group in the church, and I'm talking Calvary Grace and Grace Cochran, if there's one group that this church plant has hurt the most, it's been the youth. By far. The adults understand. The kids are really having a problem with it. And that's going to be something that, if I was to do it over again, I think we probably would have prepped the youth parents a bit better and probably moved towards a bit more, maybe of a cellular structure within the youth group to transition toward it. We planned from start to finish, I think we had 8 months of prep time. So maybe a bit longer would have helped. That's the only thing I can think of. Maybe Clint could.
Sorry, can I just tie in? Yeah. What is it in particular that they're struggling with? Is it the relational side of
friendships?
Things?
Yes. Yeah, friendships, one of the most heartrending pictures of the whole process. Like, we did a commissioning service, lots of tears, but I got a picture of two kids just hugging each other and bawling their eyes out. Like, it was tough, right? And it's not like they don't see each other. Their families still get together. We're coming to the church picnic next Saturday, right? We're still doing stuff together. The youth is still meeting together. And even when the youth groups are separate, they're still going to be doing events together. But it was something that I wish I'd anticipated better, I guess. I'd say that.
I'd say one of the biggest hurdles that has to be overcome is maintaining doctrinal clarity. And the reason why I say that is because if you aren't clear about where the lines are drawn, everybody has their own preferences. So if you want to gather a big group, you are going to have people come and they want to try to pull you toward their doctrinal preference. And not just their doctrinal preference, but also their method of ministry or their musical preference, right? The worship wars. So there's all these preferences that people have, and they want to pull you. They want to, especially in early days in a church plant, they want to see. It's a small group, so they think that they can have an outsized influence and try to steer this thing. So if you don't have doctrinal clarity about where your lines are, And what are, you know, as it were, your closed-handed and open-handed issues, or understanding, a different way of putting it is Al Mohler's, you know, theological triage of, you know, the first-order issue, second-order issue, third-order, fourth. You know where those are in the scale of importance. If you aren't clear on that, other people will set the agenda for you, and you can have, and I think this is, you know, this is textbook scenario, church plants crash and burn because they are pulled in different directions by these preferences. So I would say, even for our own experience, we had two attempts to plant churches prior to this, what I would view as a successful plant. And in one case, the challenge is as far as maintaining that doctrinal clarity. In the other case, we had doctrinal clarity from the guy from our church, but then there was people that were in the community that they weren't clear that way. They weren't on side, and so they're pulling it in a different direction. And when it's not going their way, then after a while they decide, no, I'm out. And you've been relying on them, and suddenly, boom, they're gone. So I think those are some of the challenges to you know, and I think whoever's the planter and with that core team has to be on side, and I'm sure that's the case for you guys and everyone.
Yeah, no, I mean, as a planter, I mean, every person is important, right? So you're like, oh, wow, they're willing to meet with me and talk, you know, and so there is that pressure, and it is incredible how many people out there are like what you're saying, you know, well, would you do this or would you do that? You know, they want their thing, and at first, like, you're wow, this is exactly what we've been looking for. You know, like, they give you the whole spiel. And I don't know how many people I've heard from over the last 9 years, like, oh, we've been praying for a church like this. This is incredible. And we never see them again. Like, I almost have got to the point now, like, I just don't expect them to ever come back. You know, it's the people who are kind of, like, not sure. I'm thinking, well, maybe we'll see them again. But no, totally. And so it's easy to cave. But if you cave, it's over. It won't work. So yeah, I totally agree.
So can I piggyback on your guys' comments a bit? How does it, because we've seen it, I'm sure we've all seen it, where you hear about church plants desperately needing people, and so they'll go a pragmatic route in an effort to get people to come to their church. So how do you guard and safeguard sound doctrine and not drift toward pragmatism? Like, it's one thing to say, yeah, we need to make sure we do this. How do we do this? What are the safeguards we put in place?
I mean, the one thing I'd just say, like, I would never would have dreamed of being a church planner. That wasn't my intention whatsoever. I had been in ministry for 10 years, and then we went to go to school down at Masters in California, and my wife's American, and I really like warm weather. So I'm like, this is great, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, sounds great. So that was, but what happened to me is I come home and I go to different churches and I would leave so frustrated because the pastor wasn't opening his Bible whatsoever. And then if he did open his Bible, what he was saying was refuted like two verses later. Like that kind of thing. And so God just used that to stir my heart up. And so coming back to Canada, I wasn't like, yay. It was just like more like, we need biblically sound churches in this country. And so I think part of it is as far as staying on that line is like, why are you planting in the first place? Like, what is it that we're striving for? And it should be the same as every church, every Christ-centered church, which would be, let's hold the word high, let the word speak, and let's submit to that. And so I think who you partner with is a really important thing. The organization I'm with has had its share of issues for sure, so we'll talk a whole lot about that. But what I loved about it was the doctrine was so important, the preaching the word verse by verse was so important, the evangelism was important, prayer was so important, like those key things. And so when going to church plant, if you are ever thinking of church plant, you have to think about who you're partnering with, number one, and what's the trajectory of that denomination, but then also have that deep conviction. The planter needs to have that deep conviction as well. Those are a couple things I think.
Yeah, I agree that the remedy for the pragmatism is again that deep conviction and the doctrinal clarity, because it's doctrinal clarity applied to your methodology. What's your method? What's your philosophy of ministry? So you have to be clear on that, because if that's vague or if it's faddish, well then of course it's going to change with the latest, you know, whatever, you know, the next curriculum or the next, you know, church planter book that comes out or whatever that comes out. Then the guys will jump on that. And you just know when this stuff comes down, because you can see the trickle of churches then adopting these programs, you know, because that's the next surefire way to get people. But you sent the questions before, and as I was thinking about this, the pragmatism is a real problem. But there's actually, I see another real problem in the church planting, and it's actually the flip side. It's that guys are planting churches with, and the threat is not pragmatism, but being doctrinally quirky. And what happens then is those churches become vanity projects. And so I see this in the States. I see it a little bit happening up here in Canada with some of the church planting movements that are going on. That the churches are based more on vanity projects, where you get some guy that's got the gift of the gab and, you know, looks good, or, you know, is a good networker or whatever he might be, but then his choice of doctrine or the things he camps on are kind of quirky, and, you know, maybe he's going to be pragmatic, maybe he's going to be a doctrinal hard shell. that you can do it either way. You can have guys that say, oh, I'm going to plant a church, and I don't really want it to grow, but I want it to be self-sustaining, and I'm going to kind of recreate, you know, 17th century Puritanism, right? And so then you have that kind of stuff where it's just a vanity project, and he's not really worried about advancing the gospel. So I think both are a concern, and sometimes we immediately worry about the pragmatism, but actually that doctrinaire, us four, no more, close the door kind of thing, you know, that's a problem too.
Only thing I'm going to add, and I know for the folks here it's going to sound like redundant because Andy and I have been saying it, is the best remedy to get both of those things is you just can't be afraid of failure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You do this because you're called to do it. And if you believe in sovereignty, God is the one that determines success. If you look at Paul went to places and, man, everything went right. Then he went to other places and he was stoned to death and left for dead. But he didn't worry about that. So you are going to do stuff. If you're really about faithfulness and obedience, you'll try stuff. It doesn't work. You go to God and say, okay, Lord, help. And then when you do other stuff and sometimes do it, you feel like you did it all wrong and God blesses it, then you're humble and go, oh, that was God. Yeah. Right? So I think the best way to compensate for these both of these extremes is you understand your calling is obedience, not a success model.
One quick thing, just again, very early going, we're only a few weeks in, but I'm appreciating more and more every week the relationship we have with our mother church, simply because I think that kind of accountability is crucial. You've got someone able to speak into your life. And moreover, if you're replicating their DNA, so to speak, to use some of the church planting lingo, you've seen this work elsewhere, so to speak. You've seen the Lord bless this kind of ministry before, and you're more secure in your own skin, so to speak. So I think and the other flip side of that is that having a strong relationship with your sending church, or if you have more than one sending church, if it's a strong relationship, there's less of a temptation, I think, perhaps to go to pragmatic extremes, for instance, looking for help, because you've got support, you've got resources.
Moving in a slightly different direction, is there anything wrong? Like, there are churches that will say, we're not going to plant a church, but rather we're just going to build a massive, huge church. We're just going to spend the millions of dollars to build a monster facility and just get bigger and bigger and bigger in our location. Is there anything wrong with that, or should we be thinking through more of a church planning model than a bigger facility model? That's a big thing in our culture today. Let's build a massive facility. How do you speak to that as we're talking about church planting? We saw Tim Keller kind of take the big church that he had, and now what does he have? Three locations.
He trained up three guys, yeah. And then sent his Divinity's church up into three.
To specific communities where the people were. So can you guys speak to that a little bit?
Just very quickly, and this is probably more applicable to you, to me, and to you guys here in Black Diamond, but if that's if that is the only model, then Black Diamond's not going to have a church. I'm sorry. Cochrane's not going to have a church. Canmore won't. Like, that works in big urban centers, and I do understand the urbanization of Western society is something that we have to missiologically compensate for sure, but there's still communities that aren't million plus that need the gospel. So I would say there's nothing wrong with mega churches in principle, but if that is the goal we're all striving for, I think it's a little short-sighted, and for some of us it just ain't gonna work.
I think about Hebrews 13, you know, 17, where we're going to be held accountable as leaders of the people that we shepherd. I think it's really difficult. The bigger the church, the harder to know, are your people truly being discipled? So I think just pragmatically, it's better if you can say, hey, why don't you 200 people go and start a church over here? You're already coming from that area if you have that kind of situation. I will say, so Hope Bible in Oakville, they have a church of, I don't know, 4,000 people, 5,000 people. They've planted three or four churches now. They keep trying to give their people away, right? But it just keeps, you know. So not every every big church has the mentality of they just want to be big. They just, you know, for whatever reason, keeps bringing people there. But I think as much as you can, you want to put solid churches in communities closer to people so that you can reach those communities.
A wise Newfoundlander said, don't make the exception to the rule the rule. I think a mega church is an exception to the rule. I actually think you'd have a hard time through the church epistles to the early church fathers, all this defining that this was what you strove for. You know, when we went through Mile One Mission, as you guys already know, I went to our elders and said, what would be better for St. John's? A church of 2,000 or 10 churches of 200? And I would actually say, okay, pragmatics. If you actually add up what you got to spend to have a church of 2,000 and house them and do the ministry and the staff, I think you'd be shocked to know that that will cost you more money than 10 churches of 200. Plus, you're not going to have that without you having a celebrity pastor. That's straight up the truth. And there's no way, even on a church of 2,000, that every member feels they have access to the pastor. And thirdly, God help us if he falls, because they're spread to the four corners of the earth. It's bad enough if a pastor falls in a church of 200. But if there's nine other churches with solid leadership that can swoop in and do damage control and they're working together and protecting each other, I'd say that's a much more affirmative way to mitigate the damage of the fall of the pastor. And so while I'm not going to come right out and say I think it's anti-biblical, I think it's anti-biblical.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Steve.
What Steve said.
Yeah, what Steve said. That's excellent. My next question will be kind of a two-part question. So how long should... I'm just going to read it because this is exactly how we sent it to you. How long should the church plant... be dependent on the sending church, and how do you know when that church plant is ready to become autonomous?
I can just talk about our model, how we do it. So thanks to Canadian laws and the way that you have to do, if you want, assuming we'll still have this idea of charitable status, it takes a while. In the States, I think it takes like 2 weeks. But here, it takes a lot longer. So to get that church going, for them, people to be able to give, for them to get charitable status, oftentimes they have to fall under a particular church. And so that's what our case has been with both our church plants. And when our churches first start, we have an elder-led church government. We kind of have our elders kind of help oversee that particular church plant for a season, until that pastor can find elders in his church. And it gives him time to start looking around. Sometimes the people that you think would be good elder candidates aren't always good elder candidates. So the goal would be, in our particular group, is with a year to a year and a half, to have your own eldership. And at that point, then you become an autonomous church. You should have your own charitable status by that time. And have your leadership in place. If there's problems, I mean, it can go 2 years or whatever, but that's just kind of the guideline that we use.
So I agree with everything that Trev said, and I'll add is that I don't think there's a set answer. So you guys have heard from Andy. So I love what Trevor said, because I would view it as some churches may always be dependent on the mother or a hub church or a daughter work. You know, in the schemes in some of our poor countries, you can have 200 people have an established leadership, but they can't pay a full-time pastor. And they're going to be in dependence upon the greater church. And I think you have examples of that in the New Testament. So I don't think it's about financial independence. So let's just take that off the table.
That's key.
To me, it's about the autonomy of established leadership and a group of people that are functioning, that have the ordinances, they practice membership, discipline, all of those types of things. But there's always and maybe some interdependence on a mother church or a hub church for quite some time. And our model, we've actually written it into our network that until you have a plurality of elders and a functioning membership with functioning discipline, you are not an autonomous church. And even moving forward, if anything happens to your church and it goes back to one elder or less, you graciously submit to the authority of another church of a plurality of elders. And that's also including Calvary. So if Calvary ever falls to pieces, even though we hope it'll be a hub church, it would still place itself under the authority of maybe one of the daughter works that has an established authority. So I think if there's that kind of cooperative effort and stuff, but I just want to clarify that I think financial independence in our culture might work, but that's not a blanket statement. I think it has more to do with a gathering of believers that function as a church, practice membership, have established authority, practice the ordinances, and then go from there.
And when you get into that, then you realize that there's different church planting groups that use the language differently. So you'll have different church planting groups that say, you know, some guy going out doing evangelism, and maybe he's got one other or two other people with him. Then they'll say, oh, yeah, we've got a church plant in this neighborhood. And it's like, no, you don't. There's no church there. That's not, you know, that's Christians, and they're doing evangelism and praise the Lord. But that's not a church. And so, as Steve pointed out, separating out the financial from the ecclesiastical, because you have to understand what is a church, what constitutes a church. And so you have to be extremely clear about what that is. It's not just wishful thinking about some evangelism. And for us, in the past, what we differentiated was between what we called missions. We had a mission to Canmore. And so there was evangelistic outreach in Canmore, but we couldn't convert a core. There was no core converted to establish a local church. So at a certain point, we had to let it go. And now Jeff's planting the church in Cochrane, but it's an established covenanted membership together with a clear pastor who can practice the ordinances. But until Jeff has another elder there, they are still under then the supervision, just like both these Trevor and Steve had said, they're under the supervision of our elder board.
Good. So a question came in, and I wanted to just kind of flesh it out. One of the questions that came into me here was regarding the Lone Ranger church planter, who doesn't have a sending church necessarily, but feels the call to plant a church.
Is this about me? No.
No, I'm not naming any names. No, it was just a question about is there a place for that ever? And if so, how did that look?
I hope so.
I think the question came out of, we've been talking a lot about the sending church and the church that's planted. So what about the church that's planted that doesn't have a sending church? Is that okay? And what are the challenges with that?
Well, I'm going to speak to it because
because
that is me. Not that I set out the difference. I should explain. I didn't set out to plant a church by myself. I didn't come waltzing into Calgary and say I want to plant a church. I had people who solicited me and asked me if I would assist them. They wanted to see a church get established, and we had low expectations. Of course, God is able to exceed our expectations easily, and then a church came about. And I do not tell anyone that that is a model. It's not a model to be copied. It's just what God did. And I praise the Lord for it, but it's out of the ordinary. And so anyone then is kind of waltzing around thinking, oh, okay, I'm going to be a church planter. I'm going to plant a church without any accountability or connection. That's really troublesome. For myself, I did have accountability from a local church out at Blackie, and also I had developed a network of pastors that I was talking with and basically following the templates that they were giving me. One of our friends, Paul Martin in Toronto, I basically followed, you know, everything he did in his church plant. So there was a lot of accountability there. But I think it's a great danger, and it's like a lot of things. People will say, oh, I'm going to be a missionary to said country, and they're just going to go out, and they have no connection to their local church. It's the same thing. They're not really they're going off without that backing and without that accountability. It's very dangerous.
Again, so hear him. Don't make the exception to the rule the rule. And I think he'd say, "Don't do as I did. Do as I say." Right. So I just think, because again, the New Testament model is God called and church affirmed. But again, God always works in mysterious ways. Our problem is when we see that, then we get someone to go, well, if he did it, I can do it. And that is not, that's not the model, right? God also had someone sleep with some lions. I'm not looking to do that either. or get in a furnace or something like that, right? So I would say that's something you should be very – and again, I know Clint, so I know this situation. But guy comes to me and says, I'm just going off, man. I want to know, well, are you a member of a church? Who's the pastor in your life? And if he goes, no, I'm not a member and I don't listen to pastors, then why would I want you for one? Right? That type of thing. So,
well, and the other thing it gets into, Steve, doesn't it, is the internal and external call, right? Because guys will claim, oh, I'm called to church, to plant a church in this area, and that's their internal desire, but they have no external affirmation of that calling by a local church, and that's the presumption. So it gets into some of those issues that are just basic for a guy called into ministry, both the internal desire but also the external affirmation and assessment by a local church.
I'll take off my Grace Church Cochrane hat and put on my old Calvary Grace hat for a minute, because I joined Calvary Grace about a year and a bit into its life, and much of my job was to basically try to come up with structure, build the architecture of the church. And looking back, the fact that Calvary Grace started the way it did, spontaneously, without ascending church or anything like that, we reinvented a lot of wheels. There was a lot of work we had to do from scratch that, honestly, probably if we had started a different way, could have been that energy, that effort could have been put into something else. I think a lot of people have a romantic picture of church planting, especially the evangelistic and mission side of it. But the fact is, you're building an institution, you're building an organization. There is a ton of work that goes with that. And I think a lot of guys don't understand that when they're getting into it. If you're going into it as a lone ranger and that's not your gift, it's not going to go well.
I had a question come in, so I'll just read it straightforward. Is there a need for church revitalization rather than church planting? And what strategies would you recommend?
Not rather than, in addition to.
In addition to?
We need both.
Need both. The great challenge is to revitalize a church, you have to have a sufficient doctrinal compatibility with that church to have the building blocks to work with. And right now, in the current climate in Canada, it's becoming increasingly difficult to have those basic building blocks as far as affirmation of just even the barest evangelical confession of the gospel. And so that's what makes the revitalization difficult. But I think there is the prospect for that. The way it's going, I think these denominations and their leadership are tending to drive out anyone with confessional evangelical convictions. And so it's very difficult to actually navigate that, especially for younger men. I think older guys that maybe have a little bit of seniority, a little bit more authority, and also a lot of savvy and wisdom, I think they can navigate it a little bit better. I can think of one friend of ours, Norm Dirksen in Calgary, who's at First Baptist, and he's doing a revitalization there, but he's an experienced pastor, and he's an excellent preacher. So he has that going for him. He doesn't have to kind of stress about that like a young guy would. And in the meantime, he's got to expend a lot of energy in navigating committees and trying to work with old infrastructure and things that are unbiblical practices and try to reform them, all while not getting himself fired.
Well, and he was really clear.
He was very clear
when he went
front.
In, too. Hey, very I don't clear. Think you want to hire me. I'm about
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
No, we really want you. No, like, these are the things I believe. No, we really, you know, so... Yeah. That was a big part of it too, right?
So whoever asked the question, I would encourage you. Andy Davis has a book called Revitalize. I think anybody that wants to know about that should read that book. And I think that in the culture of Canada, I think if we're going to do revitalization, we need to look again to our brothers and sisters to the east in the old country in regards to Scotland, because Mez gets asked this a lot, and he goes in and basically says, pass me the keys, burn the Constitution, give me your facilities, and I'll start.
Yeah.
And if you're not willing to do that, then go find somebody else.
Yeah, so churches that are at a place of desperation,
right,
and are flexible and open, mm-hmm, then there's a possibility, but there's too many churches that they're actually not desperate enough,
yeah,
yet to actually be revitalized. They're not low enough and bad enough yet.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I had a question that came in I wanted to ask here, if I can pull it up here. So a few times, and particularly Steve, you've mentioned the importance of living amongst the people in Cochrane. There's a group that already lived there, and so you planted a church where there was a group already living there. What if you're targeting a community, or you believe that the Lord's calling you to plant a church in a particular community, but not many people from your church actually live in that community? How important is it to move into that community and live there? Does that matter?
So, I mean, these guys, I mean, I can only speak to my model in regards to what I've studied in our city and what I think we need, which one of the reasons. And again, I'm not creative. I'm not an original thinker. I have shamelessly copied 20 schemes and made it mile one mission with a Canadian flag on the bottom of it. But for us, the culture of our people, it's just as what's necessary. You're not going to drive in and be counted as authentic. It's just not. And I also think, based on what Andy taught us, I really question how you do discipleship from afar. You know, where church is the only event you get together, and you're not living. How can I ever really know how somebody really treats his wife if I'm not in the everyday life to see how he treats his wife? Anybody can put on a show for 90 minutes, and most do. So for our model, you have to, and what we're belligerent about that. We're very dedicated to that. We are not, you know, because as we get this, I've already had people in our own church. Oh, this is cool. I want to go over there and help them. And don't, but you live 20 miles away. You know, you plant, you get, you know, grow where you're planted. You don't need to go over. Or sell your house, move there, and then give her bickies. Like, go for it. Sorry, that was a Newfoundland thing.
What is it?
Yeah. You know, so we're, that's our... Now, I will tell you where we're committed to our model. So I have our youngest, I think, most gifted elder in our church came to me, and for the first time, they were in a situation to buy a home. So the neighborhood that we're planning our first church in is called Kilbride. Don't ask. It's a funny story. But he came to me and said, listen, the housing's a little cheaper for us as first-time home buyers. We may buy a church in Kilbride. And I'm like, well, dude, if you do, then you're part of the new church core. Like, I love you, but you're not going to remain as an elder at Calvary. You're going to be a part of the new, and that's going to hurt our church, but that's our model. And he totally embraced that, and our church was ready for that. Now, he decided not. He got a better deal closer to where our hub church will be. So, praise God, he'll be a part of Calvary, and we'll be able to use him for that. But we're committed to whatever that looks like. Where we build our new church, I don't live in that neighborhood yet, but as soon as we do, my house goes up for sale. I'm building a home within a kilometer of where our new church will be, and I'm going to be there in that community. Because if not, I will never have credibility in my world. I'll always be some dude trying to rescue somebody from afar, and that's just not going to work for us.
Well, I'll comment on out here, because everybody drives everywhere out here. And so people will drive past numerous grocery stores in order to go to Costco. You know, so people travel all around. So recognizing just that culture here, as opposed to, and I've been in Toronto where I was downtown, went church downtown, you basically walk to church. And it's like the old village churches. You know, you're all in the village, you just walk to church. You know, it's like, you know, Pride and Prejudice or something. You know, you just trundle along, you know, to everybody walks to church. And that's great. And that's good. And I think what Steve's talking about in terms of that context where you're trying to break into this hard ground, I think it's really important. My own view is out here, that's the ideal, is to have neighborhood churches. That's the ideal. But I know my church, and my guess is probably for Trevor's church too, is that we're hub churches where people drive from all over the place. But why do they do that? It's because there's no gospel preaching churches. You know, we know that since our two plants, there now is a few good gospel preaching churches. But people will drive a long ways just to go hear the gospel. So it's not ideal in terms of our discipleship, but it is necessary. It's better to have these hub churches rather than to say, well, I'm not going to bother because I'm not living close enough. If I was to move next door to my church, I'd be driving the same distances to all the people all around. Now, what I would say is we do a lot of outreach in the community where our church building is located. And so I try to make myself known, particularly to the business owners. But I think it's also just, this is where sometimes taking models and then transplanting them and just assuming they work in your context, you know, it doesn't necessarily so. And so I think that's where, I mean, Steve commented on all the driving he's been doing since he's been out here. You know, and he said everything's far away. Well, that's just it. We all cruise around. And yet, this means, though, we have to be creative about how we do discipleship and the engagement that we have when we see each other and the deliberateness. But I think it can be done. Is it ideal? Maybe not, but it just illustrates to me Alberta's a wasteland. So,
I was going to say just the one other thing with that is, so I was just talking to some guys about this earlier this morning, but we've had three families coming from Strathmore, so that's a 45-minute drive. To our church. Just in the last month, three different families have driven, you know, to come to church there. So then it's like, well, I hear that. I'm like, well, okay, well, should we start looking at maybe having a small group in that community so that we could, you know, if they are going to make the drive, then we can start to build something there that, Lord willing, someday maybe we would plant. You know what I mean? Like, start thinking that way. Like, I don't know. Honestly, and most of this stuff, I'm just kind of winging it, you know, and saying, Lord, what do you want? You know what I mean? And but if we have a heart for the people of this country, a heart for the people of this province, like, we have to just say, okay, well, this was our plan, but if you have a different plan, we want to get on that too.
And I think you guys are the same, is that you have a kind of a community group model where it's not just, oh, well, we're in our tight little Bible study where we get to study the stuff we want to look at, but rather it's a group that's fellowship-based, that's discipleship-based. You are learning together, but you're also thinking about how can we share the gospel in our community. So then, and that's how then a Cochrane plant can work, where you basically add a Cochrane community group that learns how to be a church together before you've even planted the church. So those I would just say are the creative ways of trying to deal with a different context. But at the same time, like Steve's saying, I think those are the ideals. I've said to many people, every time I try to move to Calgary, my house floods. So I don't know, I'm trying to wonder what the Lord's telling me. So,
well, let me conclude with one last question. There's our folks here that are largely, not all, but largely from our church here. But this is also going to go online. By the way, is it okay if we put this online? Yeah, okay.
Nobody knows me.
Yeah, okay. But so there'll be other, Lord willing, other folks listening. And what would you say to a church that's contemplating a church plant? What would be one or two key things that you would say if you are contemplating planting a church? Here are two or three things that you gotta think through and pray through before you start, above all else.
You have to ask yourself why. Why are you planting a church? Why are you doing it? Is it to alleviate your building capacity issues? Is it because you've got a group of people that are kind of unhappy and they want a certain methodology or certain style of music, or and you basically want to say, okay, yeah, go and be blessed, get out of here, right? You know, I mean, that is how plants happen. You've got to really think about your motivations. Is it that we want to franchise our brand? Is that the reason? You know, all these different rationales can come up, and I think you really have to think clearly about why we want to do it. And sometimes it can be by a false view of, well, church planting in and of itself is a good thing. Well, generally it is good, but maybe it's better, and I personally believe this, that in Canada, these hub churches, the sending churches, probably need to grow just a little bit bigger and a little bit sounder. I mean, one of the things I noticed about Steve's church is since he's got there, his church has grown. And now it's probably even healthier so that he can actually be freed up so that he can do the Mile One mission stuff. And if it had that little bit more capacity, it'd be really difficult then to sustain then this kind of work. You know, and it's the same for, I'm sure, for you, Trevor, like, you know, as you've grown, well, then it's easier then to have these plants because you have enough capacity. So I think you really have to think through the rationale biblically and practically with where your church is at.
I guess count the cost. And I'm not talking financial, but it's hard work. It may fail, and if it fails, it's going to hurt. Even if it succeeds, there's going to be hurt. Clint has described to me, because I'm a little out of the loop at the mother church now, and he described it almost like postpartum depression after we all left. Like it's going to be painful, and you know it's worthwhile. Most things that are worthwhile hurt a little bit. But you have to, and I say count the cost because it's not a vanity project. If you treat it that way, you're not going to be committed to it, and then it'll really blow up on you. You have to be in it for the long haul, especially those going, but I think the sending church as well.
Maybe one thing, maybe just a little bit of a nuance in that. The group that we're with now, the way that we've set things, that every church is expected that they will church plant. It's not if, it's just a matter of when. And I think that's healthy if we're about the Great Commission, if we're about seeing people saved. We should have that expectation. But I agree with what's been said. I mean, you have to have health to do it, and you need to be prayerful about it. But what it does is raises the bar instead of just saying, well, we're just happy with our little holy huddle here. We want to see the gospel go across this country. And so we believe that Christ is building his church, and so it is through the church that we're going to reach the country. So where does, you know, maybe it's partnering with an organization that does that. Maybe it's, you know, so you're not necessarily being the church that's sending out the people, but maybe you're helping in another way with that. So, but I think the expectation should be that we should all, you know, do that.
I was just going to say, just with the previous discussion then, in light of what Trevor's saying, is that then if it's not logical to plant, you know, somewhere near you, then the other impetus then is to support missions, pioneer church planting. That's what's needed on the mission field, is pioneer church planters supported to establish churches. So,
ooh,
I mean,
ooh,
either,
ooh,
either,
ooh.
Segue to
mile one.
Just to summarize, so basically what, you got to have ecclesiology from the outgo. Right, that's what Trevor just said. And so that's a $50 theological word for just how you see the church functioning, why it exists, and what its purpose and calling is. So your ecclesiology, you got to count the cost, expect failure, and expect opposition. For whatever anybody says to you, you will face opposition spiritually, humanly, emotionally, internally, in every way possible. So all of that. So to summarize, I think what we've all said is your ecclesiology has to be set, then count the cost, expect failure, and that is not your definition. That doesn't define you. Your value's in Christ, not in planting five churches. And finally, just expect opposition, because the glories of whatever thing we're talking about is to come. We're in the already but not yet, right? So just embrace that. It makes life go a lot simpler.
That is super good. Well, thank you, men. I just want to shout out here. We want to pray for these churches. We want to pray for Jeff at Grace Church Cochrane. Is that what the name is, Grace Church Cochrane? We want to pray for them. It's a new work there, and there's a lot that goes into it. You've already heard a little bit about that. We want to pray for Jeff and for the team that's there, for the church there that's growing. We want to pray for their good. Trevor is at Redemption Church North, and we want to pray for the Redemption Church family. Of churches as well. So we'll pray for Trevor. If you find yourself in North Calgary, go to his church. If you're in Cochrane, go to Jeff's church. If you're in downtown Calgary, go to Calvary Grace and pray for Clint and for the work that's going on there. We talked earlier about the competition amongst churches. We want to see the gospel advance, not be in competition, but cheer each other on. And so we want to pray for these churches. and pray for the work. These guys are all preaching the Word of God tomorrow, right? You're all preaching tomorrow? Yeah. So they're on a Saturday, the day before Sunday, they've come out here. And that's a sacrifice. We want to thank them for that, and we want to pray for them. Steve's preaching here, but these other three guys are preaching at their home.
So go.
No, you better stay here.
I did not say that.
Or go to Trevor or Jeff's.
So in light of that, Bryce, can you close us in prayer and pray for these guys as they deliver the word tomorrow?
Gracious Heavenly Father, we thank you that we can come. Lord, that we can, we've all met each other kind of for the first time or a few times, and yet it feels like a brotherhood, knowing that the gospel is at the center of the relationships. We just thank you for your goodness. We thank you for your mercy upon our lives. We thank you for the call to go and proclaim the truth of the gospel, to plant churches. And Father, we do want to pray for Clint and for Trevor, for Jeff, and for Steve, Lord, as they proclaim boldly from your word, Lord. We know that your word has authority. And I pray that each one of these men would enter into the pulpit, not only tomorrow, but in the weeks and the months and the years that you have for them, Lord, that they would enter the pulpit humbly, knowing that it is not in and of themselves that is great, but it is the God of whom they preach and proclaim, the God of the Scriptures that is great. And so, Lord, I pray that they would remain faithful. I pray that they would remain bold, and I pray that they would remain humble as they preach tomorrow. Lord, as they lead their churches, I pray so that they would lead their churches, and along with their elders, Lord, that they too would lead humbly, knowing that it is for your glory and for your exaltation that they have even been put in the position that they are in. So Lord, we thank you for this time that we've had together. I pray that we would enjoy the fellowship as it continues around tables, and be with us this evening as well. In your name and for your glory alone, I pray. Amen.
Amen. So you guys can hang out, visit as long as you want. There is a